Thank you so much, JC. That was beautiful. Very well done. I could see. I could close my eyes and I could see the wildflowers dancing on the hill in the sunlight. Then it got kind of stormy a little bit there, and then it calmed down again as the sun was setting on this beautiful summer scene of the flowers on the hillside. Kind of made me sad, actually, in this kind of weather to think about that. But very expressive and very well done. Thank you so much. You know, the way things are in the world today, it makes it pretty difficult to be a young person. Now, it's probably never going to be easy to be a teenager or a young adult. I know it certainly wasn't in my life. The teen years are a time of transition, a time of change, a time of growth. It can be kind of a confusing time as things begin to happen to and around young people. From our perspective, we see these young men and young ladies blossoming from the little children that we have seen up to that point. From the teen's perspective, those years can be fraught with self-doubt, concern about the future, wondering just what direction their lives will take. Now, Satan doesn't make it any easier. He takes advantage of vulnerabilities, of uncertainty, and inexperience. The society he's developed is one that seems appealing on so many levels, but much of what looks like it would be fun turns out to be a trap. It's all out there in Satan's world. Alcohol, tobacco, vaping, recreational drugs, sexual promiscuity, immorality, pornography are the norm. It seems that all forms of entertainment, whether music, television, movies, or what you find on the internet, teach or offer a way of life that is drastically different from what your parents are teaching. Then you mix into that the stress of school, of preparing for or starting a career, the need for friends and a social life, and all the other interests and things that you would just like to do, that you would enjoy. Another added stress is our good friend FOMO, fear of missing out. Social media is great at creating that sense of anxiety because when you look at the social media, everybody else seems to be having such a great time. Everybody else seems to have their life in order. And sometimes we feel left out. I'm glad I didn't have to deal with social media when I was growing up, when I was in my teen years. The only screen time I got was a little 26-inch black and white television that picked up four channels. And then there were, of course, the screens on the windows that kept the screens in the windows were different in those days, but they kept the bugs out. Very different world that our young people face today. Whether you're homeschooled or in public school, you become exposed to all kinds of new things, alternate philosophies, spiritual beliefs, religions, political perspectives, things that you begin to sort out. But you know, if life in this age is difficult for teens and young adults, it doesn't get any easier as you get older. We older young adults deal with the same kinds of stress and vulnerabilities, but we carry as well the responsibility of teaching and being an example for the teens and young adults, because we're all living in the same crazy world. Now, being part of God's church gives our teens and our young adults a distinct advantage. The opportunity to shape your life and to make decisions now that will lead to satisfaction and success. The title of the sermon this afternoon is Blameless in a Perverse World. That'll require a little bit of explanation. Blameless in a Perverse World is the title. I'm going to focus on some principles that can help us, whether younger or older, to find our way in this world. The principles we'll talk about are very basic, but one thing I've come to understand is that the most important principles of life are those that seem familiar and are foundational. The challenge is not necessarily in knowing what they are or understanding them, but just simply being able to apply them. Let's begin in Philippians, the second chapter. Philippians chapter 2, verse 14. And we'll work our way up to this phrase that Paul uses, which is what the title is all about. Philippians chapter 2, and we'll just drop in and begin in verse 14. Philippians chapter 2, verse 14. He writes, "Do all things without complaining and disputing." Earlier here in this verse, in this statement, Paul is reminding us of the importance of our attitude and our relationships within the church. Do all things without complaining or disputing. Don't complain. Don't grumble or express dissatisfaction or be discontent. And don't dispute. The Greek word translated dispute means to question or to argue. Some people, just by their temperament and maybe for recreation, just like to argue. They just like to dispute things. But Paul says if we can eliminate those behaviors, we'll have a whole lot more peace in our own lives and as a church. So do all things, he says, without complaining and disputing. Verse 15, that you may become harmless, or blameless and harmless, children of God without fault in the midst of a crooked and perverse generation. It starts with our attitude and our treatment of one another. And it can lead to us being people who are blameless, which means without fault, one who cannot be accused, because there's nothing for you to be accused of. Blameless and harmless. The word harmless is a Greek word that could be translated pure-hearted or untainted. Certainly, if you are pure-hearted and untainted, you would not be harmful in any way. So this simple statement implies a complicated way of life. It implies living very carefully, and it implies a great deal of effort. Because you don't just become blameless or pure-hearted. It's a matter of choice. It's a matter of growth. It's a matter of consistently living in a particular way. But that's the kind of people that Paul is urging us to become, even though we live in a world that is crooked and perverse, that's warped and twisted, that is out of what God would have us to be, out of the ordinary from what God would have us to be. We think of things as being normal around us, but in fact, the world is very abnormal because of the way that Satan has designed it. Our society is unstable, it's confused, and it's dangerous. And we have to navigate our way through it every day. Now, we carve out our safe space. We live fairly carefully and we're stable and can enjoy life from day to day. But if we look outside of this path or this safe place that we have established in our lives, we realize what the rest of the world is really like. And we have to be on guard against the crookedness and the perversities of the world that we live in. And because of that, you're all very different from most of those around you, but in a good way. Paul goes on to say that harmless children of God without fault in the midst of a crooked and perverse generation, among whom you shine as lights in the world, holding fast the word of life. The way that we are choosing, the path that we have taken, the area that we carve out of this world for our life is a safe place from which we are an example to others of what Paul is writing about, people who are blameless and people who are harmless or without who are pure-hearted and untainted by the world. So it's important for us to remember that to be blameless and innocent, we are navigating our lives through and in a world that around us is very different from what we are striving to be, a world that Paul describes as corrupt and perverse. Now, to maintain our focus and our balance in this crooked and perverse world, I want to share with you some specific reminders that will help us to be able to keep that balance and find that way of life, even though the world around us is very different. As I already mentioned, these are very basic and familiar, very likely, but if we consider them in the light of this instruction and the way that we should live, I hope that they can be helpful and meaningful to us. So again, I have three specific reminders. The first one is that what is right is always right, and what is wrong is always wrong. Today, beliefs that are specific and consistent in line with God's instruction and God's way are considered to be intolerant or phobic. The world that we live in is possessed with pluralism and with tolerance. Tolerance meaning that there's no absolute standard, there's no definition of what is right or what is wrong. The world we live in values difference and choice. Values, beliefs, and lifestyles of any flavor are acceptable and even encouraged. There are different values or different truth that are in conflict. People value different things and choose that to be their truth, but it's very likely in conflict with what somebody else believes, but they're equally acceptable. Now that sounds appealing, because it makes it seem that you can make any choice you want and no one can judge you for it. What you believe is just as good as what anybody else believes. And frankly, there's no authority that can suggest or teach something that is absolute. Now, that freedom leads to all kinds of confusion and difficulty. Another twist on that perspective or that view of life is that what might be wrong in one circumstance is acceptable in another circumstance. For example, it's wrong to steal. We'd all agree to that. But if you're Robin Hood, taking from someone who is rich and corrupt and giving it to someone who is poor and needy, well, that's okay. We can justify that. It's wrong to cheat on a test. But if you really need that grade, and if everybody else is doing it anyway, and you're not going to get caught, yeah, it's okay. Values and consideration of what is right and wrong in many people's eyes is relative. It changes from one circumstance to another. But the principle we're talking about is that we should not be confused, because God shows us that what is right is always right, and what is wrong is always wrong. Turn with me to Ecclesiastes chapter 12. Ecclesiastes chapter 12. We're going to look at a couple or three verses here in Ecclesiastes over the course of the message. Ecclesiastes is a really vivid life lesson book. Ecclesiastes it helps us understand the story of Solomon's life. It's a story of success that leads to failure and then to recovery. Many life lessons are expressed in this book of wisdom. Solomon, you may remember, got off to a great start. He received tremendous blessings from God, but he lost his way. And then it seems, as we look at the book of Ecclesiastes, that he recovered and learn from those bad choices. Hopefully we can learn without having to make the same mistakes that Solomon did. Ecclesiastes chapter 12, verse 13. We're jumping to the conclusion that Solomon reached after this life of ups and downs, of twists and turns, of mistakes and of recovery. Ecclesiastes chapter 12, verse 13. Let's hear the conclusion. Let's wrap it up and get to the whole point of what Solomon has learned. The conclusion of the whole matter, of everything that he's experienced. Here's the conclusion. Fear God, keep his commandments, for this is man's all. As it says in the New International Version, it puts it this way. Now all has been heard, and here is the conclusion of the matter. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. After all he went through, after all he experienced, Solomon concluded that the primary duty and responsibility, the obligation that we all have, is to fear God and keep his commandments. Now that sounds pretty simple. It's a simple conclusion. But of course the application of that point or that principle is very challenging. It's difficult to remember that point when we're pressured by others, when we're stumbling because of our own weaknesses and temptations, when we're filled with concern about circumstances that we can't control. What we need to remember through all those different stages and circumstances is that our primary responsibility in all different situations still is and always will be to obey God. People struggle with what is a standard to live by. What is truth? Again, when we listen to people philosophize and generalize and give their opinions, it gets very confusing, but it's really not a confusing matter at all. John 17, verse 17. John chapter 17, verse 17. These are words of Jesus Christ. It's actually part of a prayer of Christ just before he was crucified. He's speaking of his disciples as he is praying for them. And we note later in verse 20 that his prayer is not just for those 11 that were with him at the time, but it's for those who would come later. So it's a prayer that's for us. Verse 17 says, sanctify them by your truth. Your word is truth. You see, universal or absolute truth is simple to define. What God says is true. It's true for all people, in all places, at all times. God establishes the standard of truth. And when we are convinced that God is that source of universal truth, and, as we saw in Solomon's summary, it's our responsibility to fear and obey him, then we will be protected from mistakes and from attitudes, from decisions that might damage our lives and our emotional health. Sanctify them by your truth. Sanctify means to set apart or to separate from. Notice that the truth of God sets you apart from others. It sets you apart from those who don't share or understand that same understanding of truth. And that's not easy. It's not easy or comfortable to be set apart from everyone else. There often are people in the world that we would like to please. And there are things in this world that we would like to have. But because we know God's truth, we've been set apart. We have a different understanding, and that leads to a completely, entirely different direction in life. It helps us to become blameless and harmless, living in a perverse world. Turn back to John chapter 8. John chapter 8, verse 31. John 8, verse 31, Jesus is speaking to a group of Jews. These are those, it says in verse 31, these were some of the Jews who believed him. Now, there are a lot of the people in the Jewish society, and particularly the religious leaders, who did not believe him. But he's speaking here to people who believe him. And we might take that in a personal sense then, because we believe what Jesus said. He said, if you abide in my word, you're my disciples indeed. In other words, if you continue in, if you practice, if you accept and make part of your life what I'm teaching, then you're my disciples. Verse 32, and you shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. Now you often hear that phrase repeated. You'll know the truth, and the truth will make you free. People often misapply what Jesus is saying. They put their own twist on it, and they overlook or they miss the point that Jesus is making. How does the truth set you free? The truth at times might seem to encumber us. It means that we're not able to enjoy and join in with what so many others are doing. It cuts us off. It separates us. We're not free. We're bound now to obey. How is it that the truth sets you free? One of the primary ways we can understand that is that when we know that truth, when we practice it and become blameless, one of the that truth protects us again from decisions that would ruin a person's life. Turn back to Proverbs chapter 10. Proverbs, the 10th chapter. Verse 2. Proverbs chapter 10, verse 2. It's a contrast between values in life. People tend to value what they can measure, what they can weigh, what they can purchase, what they can own. There's a treasure that they are looking for. Verse 2 says, treasures of wickedness profit nothing. Treasures of wickedness profit nothing. What we might gain by choosing to live a life different from what God instructs us to do might seem, it's part of that deception we talked about earlier, it seems inviting, it seems pleasant, it seems good, but it is in fact a trap. Those treasures ultimately profit nothing. For a short time, maybe they might be enjoyable. They profit, they actually come to nothing. But righteousness delivers from death. How does the truth set you free? The truth reveals to you a way of life, a way of obedience to God that delivers you from the consequences, from the difficulties that you would have if you choose not to obey God. It protects us from mistakes that ruin our life, and it can save our life. Look at chapter 11, verse 4 in Proverbs. Chapter 11, verse 4. It says, riches do not profit in the day of wrath. The day of wrath, I guess, could be understood in a number of different ways. One way to understand it is that it's the time when God calls things and puts and reveals what his judgment is regarding a person. And when God is not pleased with the way a person has lived, whatever he has, whatever he may have put his security in, whatever might have been so important to him, really means nothing. But righteousness delivers from death. Righteousness, again, can save our life so that we live in a way that produces the results we really would like to have. So if you come across a philosophy or a teaching or a rationalization that there is no authority, there is no truth, there is no answer beyond what you can come up with for yourself, that's a lie. God tells us there is truth, and he teaches us what is truth. And if we are willing to accept that truth and base our life upon it, then, as we see here in Proverbs 11, it can save our very lives. So that brings us to the second point I want to emphasize. How is it that this protection comes about? How is it that that choice can save our life? The second point is, you reap what you sow. You reap what you sow. There are consequences, either good or bad. The path you choose sets you in a direction that will take you to an end result. Some choose to ignore God's law, but even if they do ignore it, they can't make it go away, because God's law is universal. It applies to all. And no one can live outside of God's law, whether they are trying to or whether they're just living in ignorance, not aware. The result would be the same. Let's go back and look at, again, what I think is a familiar passage in Galatians chapter 6. Galatians chapter 6. You reap what you sow. It's a direct quote from this passage. Galatians chapter 6. We'll begin in verse 7. Don't be deceived. God is not mocked. For whatever a man sows, that he will also reap. Let me read it to you in the New Living Translation. I refer to other translations not because the New King James is inaccurate, but I think it just kind of brings to light a little bit the meaning, because the language is more familiar. Verse 7, the New Living Translation. Don't be misled. Remember, you can't ignore God and get away with it. You will always reap what you sow. Those who live only to satisfy their own sinful desires, we're in verse 8, will harvest the consequences of decay and death. But those who live to please the Spirit will harvest everlasting life from the Spirit. Now that's a little bit wordy and a little bit religious-y, isn't it? But the point is really very simple. If we live only to satisfy ourselves, then we're going to wind up hurting ourselves. These are some of those hard words that were mentioned in the sermonette. These are words that maybe sting a bit, that pull us up short, remind us that, you know what? God is aware of the choices we make. God is aware of how we live, and there's going to be a result from the choices that we make. There's a warning and a promise in this passage. The warning is that if we plant the seeds of self-indulgence, the seeds of sinful choices, there'll be bad consequences. It's described here as decay and death. That's a pretty bad consequence. But the promise is that if we don't become weary, if we continue our effort to live according to God's law, there will be a tremendous reward. Finish up the passage here. Verse 9. We didn't read verse 9 yet. So don't get tired of doing what is good. Don't get discouraged and give up, for we will reap a harvest of blessing at the appropriate time. Quite a contrast. Decay and death, or a harvest of blessing. But the problem is, we do get tired, don't we? And that's why there's the warning here in verse 9. Don't get weary of doing what you have learned you should do. Don't get worn down by the temptations or by our own personal weakness or our own temperament that sometimes can work against us. Don't give up on doing what is the right thing to do, because if we press on, if we continue, then it says there will be a harvest of blessing. Here's the hard part: at the appropriate time. Wouldn't it be great if every time you made a good decision, there was an instant reward of some sort? Now, maybe in some sense there will be, because you have a satisfaction of making a good decision. But oftentimes, we can choose to do what is right, and it seems like the immediate result is not pleasant at all. Sometimes people wind up not liking us or disrespecting us or dismissing us. Sometimes we just feel left out. Sometimes it's not easy to make the decision that is right, but you're planting a seed. When you make those right decisions, every right decision is a seed that you're planting. Well, so is the bad decision, according to this passage. But the point is, what's the harvest? What's the result going to be? At the right time, you will be blessed richly for the choices that you make that are good. God has given us the freedom and the responsibility to make choices. Again, that's both a blessing and a warning, in a sense. God doesn't hover over you and force you to do everything that He wants you to do. Of course, we know what He wants. We know what His instructions are. He does want us to make those choices, but He's not going to stand behind you with a sharp stick and jab you every time you do something that's wrong. But you have planted a seed, and it can result in some pretty unpleasant harvest later on. But when you make those right choices, God has given you the opportunity to make the right choices. And when you do, again, you're planting a seed. You're choosing to wait for that rich reward that is promised to those who are willing to continue. That's how obedience to God, that's how to the truth, protects us. It sets us free from some really bad consequences that we really would not consciously choose. Turn back to Ecclesiastes again, chapter 8, verse 11. You know, again, I want to emphasize these simple principles that are not difficult to understand, and maybe we're very familiar with, apply to young adults, to older young adults, to younger older adults, to teens. They apply to all of us. This is God's spiritual instruction. Ecclesiastes chapter 8, verse 11. Here's a trap that is easy to fall into. Ecclesiastes 8, verse 11. Because the sentence against an evil work is not executed speedily, therefore the heart of the sons of men is fully set in them to do evil. In other words, that mistake, that wrong choice or decision we make might be something that is outside of God's law. He's not going to necessarily strike you down at the moment you make that choice. But ultimately, according to what Paul wrote in Galatians, there will be a reckoning. So don't be fooled. You know, that's what it says again in Galatians. Don't be fooled. God is not going to be mocked. God's not going to ignore what we do. But remember that we make those choices, and we choose what kind of an outcome we are planning to have in our lives. Choices that are based on bad decisions can have a huge and sad impact in life. Many years ago, I visited a man who was in his mid-30s. Now, this was not even in this church area, another place where we lived before we were here. But I visited with him several times over a course of a couple or 3 years. When he was in his late teens, he stopped attending God's church, and he joined the military. Now, he joined the Navy, and one weekend on shore leave, he went out to party. They did it every time they had time. He and his buddies would go out and relax, have a good time. Their kind of relaxation was to get drunk and to try to find a woman to spend some time with. So he did. He got drunk. He picked up a lady at the bar, spent the night with her. I would imagine they had a great time. What they did was they found to be very enjoyable. That kind of thing happens all the time. This man came home HIV positive, which developed into AIDS. He called me over the years. He kept asking me if God would be willing to forgive him. I told him, yes, God will forgive you. He'll remove from you the death penalty that comes from having sin, but you will carry with you that scar. You made the mistake. He still lost his wife and his son. He still had AIDS. And emotionally, he was devastated, constantly depressed. That's an extreme example, I understand. That's not going to happen to me, and I hope it won't. But it can. That world is out there. That world is calling to us. And if not that mistake, then there are any number of others that we can make that will take us outside of God's law and devastate life. It doesn't only takes one slip, one mistake. Consider the end. We're coming to the final point that I want to make. That's what I want you to consider. Talking about reaping what you sow, that seems out there a long ways, but it's reality. The third point that I want to emphasize is consider the end. Not the moment. Consider what the moment can lead to. Sometimes the real point of life gets lost in the details. To put it bluntly, life is difficult and then you die. But there's another phrase to add to that. Life is difficult and then you die, but then you live. One thing we learn as we understand the truth that is revealed to us is that this life is not the only gift that God is giving to us. He wants us to use this life to learn, live and learn. But why do you learn? Why? What should you learn? You learn God's way, you learn how to practice it, you learn how to employ it in your life, you learn how to build your life around it. Why do you do that? Why should you do that? What is that ultimate harvest that God is going to give to you at the time that is appropriate? I want to point out as well that we get lots of blessings along the way. God's way of life is good. And sometimes it comes across as if it's a real difficult choice or a burden. God's way of life leads us to all kinds of blessings and good things we can enjoy and appreciate all throughout our life. But it's also leading to something even more than that. As you experience life, as you receive God's blessings, what is it that you learn and why do you learn it? When we keep in mind what God wants to give us, then we learn from those experiences in life and we learn important lessons that will help us, first of all, to remain blameless in a perverse world, but also to be able to receive the ultimate blessing that God wants to give to us. So think it all the way through. Sometimes events take place that are hurtful, that are frightening, that are difficult, and we have trouble seeing beyond those. Sometimes we're tempted to give in to things that we want to enjoy that we know that we really don't need to, shouldn't go there. If we keep in mind what God really wants to share with us, it'll help us. That's never going to be easy, but it'll help us to make the decisions that we need to make to keep us blameless in a perverse world. Back to Ecclesiastes now. I think at least I'm still here, maybe. Chapter 2, verse 17. We already read chapter 12, verse 13, which shows that Solomon ultimately came to the conclusion that what life was really all about was to fear and obey God. So we look back here at chapter 2, verse 17. It's kind of a contrast that this was the frame of mind that he had before he relearned the lesson and considered the blessings that God was willing to offer to him. He said, look, I hated life because the work that was done under the sun was distressing to me for all this vanity and grasping for the wind. Vanity means empty or pointless. He came to the conclusion that whatever he did on his own, it was empty and it was pointless. So again, we all know life can be difficult. Solomon found himself to be trapped by his own appetites, and he found life to be unsatisfying and to be difficult. People trap themselves often simply because what they're trying to do is find some relief from the tedium or the difficulties of their life. They just want to relax. They just want to enjoy life. They just want to have a good time. And certainly that's not wrong in itself. We do all need a break. We even all need to party at times. But we can't use that as an excuse to go outside of God's law and try to escape the difficulties of life. The difficulties in life have a purpose. That's sometimes, again, hard to see when we're in the midst of them. But if we look past them, we can see and consider the end, what it is that difficulties can accomplish, how God can use them in our lives. Why can't life just be easy? Why can't life just always be something that we enjoy? Hebrews chapter 12. Hebrews chapter 12. Look beyond the moment if you're in some way tempted to make a wrong decision. Look beyond the moment if life is difficult, because there's a greater purpose that God is working for us. Hebrews chapter 12, verse 7. Hebrews chapter 12, verse 7. I'm going to read the New Revised Standard Version. Hebrews 12, 7. Endure trials for the sake of discipline. God is treating you as children. For what child is there whom a parent does not discipline? Now, God is not patronizing us, especially if we happen to be a child, a teenager, a young person. God treats you as a child. Well, that's not meant to be a negative thing. It's meant to show his relationship, his connection to us. And why would he do it? Why would he discipline? Why would he treat us like we're children? Well, if you do not have that discipline in which all children share, then you're illegitimate and not his children. If God wasn't part of your life, then it would be because he didn't care about you, because you weren't someone he considered a child or someone that is important to him. He goes on to say, look, we all had human parents who disciplined us, and we respected them. Hope we do. We respected them. She would not be even more willing to be subject to the Father of spirits, to our spiritual Father, and learn the lessons of life. They discipline us for a short time as seemed best to them, but he disciplines us for our good, in order that we may share his holiness. He allows those difficult times to come upon us. In effect, he wounds us from time to time with trials and challenges, but it's so that we will be able to ultimately share his life, his holiness. It seems painful, verse 11, rather than pleasant at the time, but later it yields the peaceful fruit of righteousness to those who have been trained by it. So again, here's the point. God plays an active role in our lives. If life is tough, if life is difficult, if life sometimes is sad, if life is challenging, it's not because life is not good. It's because God is teaching us to be prepared for something even better. God's purpose, this might not sound good to you initially, but God's purpose is not to give you a life of leisure and plenty. That's not God's purpose for you. Actually, he gave that to Solomon. Solomon almost ruined his life because he didn't know how to use that blessing that God had given to him. What does God offer us? Nothing less than eternal life. this life is for the purpose of preparing us for the life he wants to give to us. So, we consider the end. We make choices based on our understanding of and our desire to be part of that eternal kingdom that God is creating and providing for us. Now, those are some pretty big concepts, I think, pretty important ones. But even as young people, and as certainly as older than younger, and for all of us, there are lessons that we can learn from and we can apply in our lives. I'm going to conclude with one more example. The example of Lot. Remember Lot? In fact, that's what it says in one of the scriptures. Remember Lot. Remember Lot's wife. But do you remember Lot? Lot lived, you can read his story in Genesis 18 through 20. I won't take the time to do that. But Lot and his family lived in an evil and perverted city called Sodom. It was so twisted and so vile that God was going to destroy it because things would come out of it that would be extremely harmful to all of mankind. So God destroyed that perverted city. He lived there with his family. Angels came to rescue Lot. They found him at the gate of the city. Now, it may not sound like it is all that important, but what that implies, you see, in that society, the men who were at the gate of the city were the civic leaders. They were the ones who set rules or established, settled difficulties and matters between other residents. They were the leaders of the community. So Lot, living in that community, was actually one of the men who had that kind or that level of responsibility. But Lot lived in an absolutely ugly and perverted city. So ugly that God was going to destroy it with fire and sanitize what had been the city of Sodom and its sister city of Gomorrah. Lot survived in that environment. Look at 2 Peter chapter 2. We'll just pick out a phrase here that I think helps us to understand the decisions that he must have made. 2 Peter chapter 2, verse 7. Now, in this section, Peter is writing about the inevitability of God's judgment and how it came upon angels who rebelled and the people in Noah's time who were so sinful. And then he uses Sodom and Gomorrah as another example. Verse 7 says that God delivered righteous Lot, who was oppressed by the filthy conduct of the wicked. For that righteous man dwelling among them tormented his righteous soul from day to day, seeing and hearing their lawless deeds. Lot rose to the level of a prominent position within the city, but he did not get entangled in the sins of that community. He survived in that crooked and perverse generation, that world that he lived in. He was not swallowed up into it. His rescue from that situation illustrates, as this verse goes on to say, that God can deliver those who remain godly and who resist those difficulties and the evil that is around them. The world we live in is approaching what it was like in Sodom and Gomorrah. May not be there yet, but it's headed in that direction. We found our safe place. We live good lives. We live lives that we're protected and God watches over us and blesses us. But we live, and we should never forget, in a world that is perverse and crooked and dangerous. A world that Satan wants to lure us into. So wherever we are, whatever point we're at in life, there are challenges at every stage. Every point in life has its challenges, and they change over time. But it's important for us to all remember the perspective that we should have as we consider the world we live in and how we live in it. Remember that what's right is always right. Remember that you reap what you sow. And remember to consider the end. Remember Lot's example. We can be blameless and innocent as we navigate our lives in this corrupt and perverse world.